I've decided not to run away anymore. I have to confront this.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. This is season 4, episode 30. Wow. Peter's excellent. Peter's excellent adventure. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, Sarah.
No. Hi.
Before we get into this episode, believe it or not, not the finale. There's still this episode, one more episode, and then the 2-hour finale before we wrap up season 4. I want to tell you what's happening on the Patreon this week. Again with this episode 82. It's dropping February 4th. Let's watch Kristen Davis in Will and Grace. Her episode was season 7, episode 7, Will and Grace and Vince and Nadine. We have not taped this one yet. Sarah and I have not discussed it. I am looking forward to finding out whether we're in a fight because this was my pick, obviously, not hers. So
no.
Look forward to that. Find out if our friendship survives it on Friday.
Someone tell Tara that also, just kidding, also our Again With Them January Digest drops this Thursday, February 3rd. In case you're a recent arrival, Again With Them is our recap of the 90210 OMG podcast featuring Jenny Garth, Tori Spelling, and some other people with varying degrees of success.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon supporters at the $5 level and above get to hear that, plus our entire archive of things that made us get in fights, starring Melrose and 90210 people. So we have a good time and you should come check it out. We'd love to have you.
Yes, patreon.com/againwiththis. And for the regular bonus episodes on Fridays, that's at every level of support. The Again With Them is the one that's only for our, quote, high rollers, unquote, at the $5 level and up. So consult your finances, decide what you can afford, and join us. We would love to see you. Let's start with our C plot. Joe and Matt have very different kid problems.
No.
Matt is now in Scrubs doing rounds. Mm-hmm. This guy, moving up in the world, I guess. He's treating a sarcastic, apparently unhomed kid. Although they later say he's of age, so I guess he's over 18. But anyway, he's had a fever for a couple of weeks. Dr. O'Malley then enters to say they're going to admit him, his name is Jared, for a few days to run tests on him. And Jared gets agitated since that sounds serious. And Dr. O'Malley isn't saying what he thinks Jared might have. And also, Dr. O'Malley just has no bedside manner and is like, you're sick, do what I say. And when the nurse
this
has...
guy.
Yeah, he sucks. So bad.
I despise this character so much. And I think the actor is also terrible. So, but like in a different, almost conflicting way to the way the character is supposed to be terrible.
Yeah.
It's all just the worst.
I forgot until he had been in a couple of episodes that he's this guy, Brad Johnson, was he also had an arc on CSI. If I recall correctly, he was like a Catherine love interest, but at that time he looked way more like Tom Berenger than he does now. Mm-hmm. Like now he kind of does. By CSI times, like in, you know, 10 years or so from now, he's definitely leaned into his Berengosity.
I mean, from a visual standpoint, like I get it. This is like central casting, soap, cheekbone,
tall
beefcake.
Yeah.
Yep. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he opens his mouth and you're like, this fucking dude. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into it. But they really are making you take a lot on faith with this guy because he just keeps being shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when the nurse has wheeled Jared off, Matt comments that Dr. O'Malley was kind of curt. And Dr. O'Malley snits that he's not in the touchy-feely business, which, like, you literally are. You're a doctor.
Yeah.
You know? Well, anyway, he goes on to give Matt some free advice about being less emotional about his patients. And when Joe gets home from work that night, Dr. O'Malley is sitting on the stairs that lead up to her place looking for conversation. She warns him she's not going to be great company. And he says that's okay, presumably because he doesn't actually want to have a conversation, but rather for her to sit near him while he talks at her because that's what he is like.
Oh, I was sort of in a her mouth will be full of something and there will be no conversing.
Either
Not
way.
Not that he couldn't still be monologuing during a blowjob, which actually he seems like the type.
First one, then the other, or both at once, as you said. She continues managing expectations, saying she has to do some work, and he asks if he may watch her because it soothes him to observe a craftsman at work, which is so condescending. But she corrects him, craftswoman, but lets him help her by sorting her prints. He calls it his
Not
favorite.
A euphemism.
Nope. He calls sorting his favorite form of relaxation. And she jokes that he can sort one pile straight into the dumpster, which is not a word he likes to hear, having just found a baby and one that day, nearly dead. Thank you for putting that off screen, show. Joe is appropriately chagrined, and then Dr. O'Malley keeps fucking talking. Clip two.
You know, I'll never get why a mother would have a baby if she can't deal with the responsibility of caring for it.
Well, you don't know her life circumstances. Maybe she only had bad options.
Well, sure, okay, but when those choices affect someone else, I mean, it seems selfish to me.
Oh, and I suppose you've been a single mother, and you know what those pressures are all about.
Of course not, no.
Could you please leave?
What did I do?
I did nothing. I'm just really tired, and I wasn't expecting any company.
Listen, if it's something I said, I...
No, just go. Okay.
Okay.
Please keep going all the way out of this show. Thank you.
Yeah. Also, they have no chemistry is another problem. Like, it would be one thing if it were sort of like, you know, the hate fuck thing, but there's just nothing. No. He just sucks.
And also, I would say I'll never get how someone who works in the healing arts and meets people on their worst day all the time would lack empathy for this, he assumes, mother. But I do know that lots of doctors are pigs. So, sadly, this is not completely out of left field.
And he's like not even the most piggish doctor on the show.
Well,
so.
He's never tried to murder anyone that we've seen. So there's that.
True.
That we've seen.
Yeah, that we've seen.
Oh my God, there are three. Now that I think about it, Peter and Michael and Paul, who actually did murder someone. Anyway.
Yeah.
The next day, Dr. O'Malley's leading rounds basically treating Jared like an object, which kicks Matt into tough love social worker mode. Clip three.
Tell me, you having any joint pains?
Yeah, I got a big pain in my butt joint. I want out of here.
What's the matter? What, are you scared to stay in the hospital? What do you think's gonna happen? A boogeyman, maybe?
I ain't scared.
Then quit your whining. We're giving you three hots and a cot. That's a hell of a lot better than what you got on the street. Listen, we'll be the ones to tell you when it's time to leave.
Dr. Fisher, 5714.
Good job. Tricky sometimes making sure a patient doesn't sabotage his own therapy.
And the hard part, pretending you don't care.
Yeah, if it gets too hard for you, maybe you can go back to being a social worker.
Hey, you know what? That happens to be a very important job in this hospital. I see nothing wrong with showing
touchy. Touchy. Now, you're going to have to get a thicker skin than that if you want to stay on my team.
This guy sucks!
Yeah, plus that's like, it's so coded anti-queer and just was about to call Matt a pansy, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And but at the same time, those two have way more chemistry Dominic and Joe. Like, why don't you two make out? Because otherwise the spotlight is totally boring.
Also, just as a last note, don't disrespect social workers. Just don't.
Yeah, seriously.
Moving on. Some number of days later, Joe's at a marina shooting boats when Dr. O'Malley wanders into her shot. Doesn't know what he did to make her mad the other day. Acted like a judgmental fuck, but he wants to make up. Like, the thing about that is, like, she would not be out of line kicking him out under the circumstances, whether she had a personal connection to what he was saying or not. Like, just on its face, it's shitty.
Yeah. Also, if you got through the MCATs at med school, maybe put it together.
Right.
Guy.
Right. Anyway, she tries to literally walk away from his attempts to pry into her personal business, but finally says she's not his type because she gave up her baby because she couldn't handle the responsibility of taking care of it, which is not what happened. But no. I guess I appreciate her solidarity with parents who compassionately place their children with other families who were not trying to have them stolen from their in-laws. And when Dr. O'Malley continues prying, Joe explains about the adoption, and he's all, "You're a good mother. You gave your baby a home, and I love you for that." And she yells at him not to use that word, and then says she's been avoiding him because she doesn't want to get hurt again, but he keeps not going away. And then she falls on his chest sobbing and lets him hug her. Joe, you can do better than this absolute turd. I hate this. I hate it.
Yeah. And also, sometimes when a woman is mad at you, she's just mad at you because you've been a twat.
Yes.
And you don't need to break down her defenses so that she'll cry on your shoulder. Mm-mm. And then give you a hummer.
Right. Right.
Like, I'm really getting much angrier about this stupid plot line than it warrants. But I mean, we're in the 30s of these episodes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this is like, they're spending so much time laboriously putting chess pieces in place that we have nothing else to think about but how much these ways of thinking about things sucked.
Yeah, well said. Sometime later, Matt is treating Jared some more, specifically trying to start an IV, and Jared is increasingly frustrated that no one's telling him what's going on with his treatment. And when Matt has a hard time finding a vein, Jared gets pushy, finally storming out AMA, as in against medical advice, not asking mm-hmm. anything, and shoving Matt away from him, in the process of which Matt falls onto the bed and the discarded needle ends up in his shoulder. The skin is broken, and Matt is like, oh, no. And I guess I'm glad if they had to do a disease scare plotline with the show's one gay character, it was not an unprotected sex story, but still not great.
Well, and they never exactly say what he, like, the implication is, but I think they never exactly say that the problem is that it could be an HIV stick, and
right.
that's what's going on with Jared, like unexplained, uh-huh. you know, fevers of unknown origin. Like, okay, right. fine. Mm-hmm. But that it's Matt that gets saddled with this. Like,
right.
oh my God. Like you could just see Doug Savant looking down at the wound. And it's like, it's Matt being horrified at what happened, but it's also Doug Savant being like, God fucking damn it.
Yeah,
like
totally.
When do I get to kiss someone on television? Otherwise, I don't think I could stay here. This is bullshit. So yeah.
Moving on to our B plot. Jane decides the cops can't help her, but that doesn't mean no one can. This story opens with Jake parking his bike outside Richard's office that he still has somehow and storming toward
and
the door.
And still packing up, probably.
just, every day he just goes in and like packs, and then the next day he unpacks. That's what he's doing in this office. Allison must have hauled ass out of Jane's place because she is immediately getting out of her car and chasing after Jake to try and stop him, but she's too slow, and Jake makes it into Richard's private office to start beating the shit out of him with his helmet. And Allison tries to get between them, screaming that killing Richard won't solve anything, while Richard tries to threaten Jake back with, I think it's a paperweight off his desk.
Yeah.
yeah, okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Allison continues pressing her point persuasively. Clip four.
This doesn't help, Jane. This is about her pain, not your anger. She needs you. She doesn't need you in jail.
You know, that's a good point, Allison. Why don't we put this on the 911 tip?
Yeah, I hope you do call the cops. It'll save me the trouble.
Look, I don't know what Jane told you went on between us in New York.
Rape went on between you.
Well, I have a different perception, all right? Maybe we got our wires crossed.
Come.
No, no. Listen, Jake. We'll take him to court. He will not get away with this. He will be convicted, and his life will fall apart. Jane will survive.
You better hope you go to jail. Unless you're a dead man.
Boy, Allison is very hopeful about things that are definitely not going to happen.
No, they're not.
Then it's the next morning. Jane's on her couch wrapped in a blanket while Allison yells at her to press charges, and Jake stands behind Allison, glowering. Jane lists the shitty things the cops are definitely going to say about the incident and whose fault mm-hmm. it is, without adding that the crime happened in another state, and I'm pretty sure the DA in Los Angeles does not have jurisdiction, but, I mean, you would know that better than me. No?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Not a cop.
Right.
Don't AMA.
Mm. Anyway, when Allison continues bleeding at her, Jane calmly asks her not to presume she knows how Jane feels, and Allison backs off, but does not apologize, which she should. Jane just wants to get on with her life, but Jake doesn't know how she can. Buddy, what you don't know about the situation could fill a warehouse. Shut the fuck up and listen to your girlfriend. He is horrible in this storyline. Like,
Yeah.
Absolutely awful.
Just like repeatedly like five tool horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible with arm grab. Mm-hmm. Horrible with blocking doors open.
Yeah.
Yelling at people. Oh, yes. Terrible.
Ordering her to do this or that. Like
Allison is not great either, but at least Allison is wearing a cardigan that I want. So I'm willing to be slightly more forgiving, sure. But only slightly.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. So as Jane walks off, Allison keeps insisting that she wants to help Jane and supports whatever Jane wants to do, which, like, I don't know, maybe if you stop yelling, that would help her the most right now. But before Jane makes it to her room, Allison offers to call a friend in the DA's office that she has, I guess, and Jane reluctantly agrees. And Allison looks back at Jake, who's just glaring at neither of them like a fucking creep, and it's terrible. And then immediately we're at the courthouse as Jane meets with Allison's friend we've never met or heard of before. Her name is Barbara Lewis. She's played by Donna Bullock, a.k.a. Hey, it's that press secretary from Air Force One. That's where you've seen mm-hmm. her before.
She has a picture of a golden retriever framed on her desk. My people.
Well, she is and she isn't, because Jane is definitely being set up for disappointment. Clip 5.
I was afraid to come, but I feel better just being here.
Uh-huh.
And it's such relief that you're a woman, too. I mean, I really didn't think I had a case, but now I feel like maybe there's hope.
Well, your instinct was right. This will be a tough one. But it's doable.
Oh, I'm glad you feel that way.
You're facing some big obstacles, though, and you need to know what they are going in.
Well, I know that it's his word against mine. And
it's more than that. You were known lovers. You've been partying. You took him home. Why'd you wait so long to report it? You gotta get your story straight about that.
It's not a story.
I can get expert testimony to support whatever you say. The real problem is that there's no physical evidence on your side, and all the witnesses at the party that night seem to confirm his story.
But he's guilty.
Certainly. Now, the next hurdle will be preparing you to have your sexual history paraded in front of the jury. We'll do a mock-up cross-exam, but these things can be brutal sometimes.
But he did it.
And we'll go after him for it. But the odds are against conviction. Still, prosecuting's a good thing. It'll give you back a sense of your own personal power, and it makes for a strong statement.
Really one for making statements.
Well, and as Tara pointed out, this occurred in another time zone. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I understand why they're glossing over that part, but
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And it was
Dave. Not a whole lot has changed.
Yeah. Yes. This. That's the thing. Yeah. But yeah. She probably has a bright side to tell Jane about after that, right? Wrong. Clip 6.
Look, I know all this must seem a bit harsh. I just want to give you a hint of what it'll be like so you can make a realistic decision.
I mean, I get it. And she is kind of doing Jane a favor by not.
Yeah.
You know, getting her hopes up about how shit's going to go, but that doesn't make it any less grim.
Yeah. Well, and just hearing it listed like that, because, you know, Allison and not Jake, but Allison's like, you've got to go to the cops. And it's like, for what?
Right.
So she can be told that she has even less agency than she thought she did in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe let her come to that on her own, but then to see it, you know, that they took the time on the show to just be like, here are the following bleak realities about cases like this. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, this is what they try to avoid on SVU mm-hmm. or they did. I haven't watched it lately. Maybe now they're being more like, well, guess this is how the world is and we're going to not pretend it isn't. I don't know.
No, they just sort of like try to set things up in such a way that like there was a camera or traces right. of Rohypnol or something, which is like equally depressing in terms of like the big brotherness of
mm-hmm.
You know, big city life in America slash right. that everyone has to walk through bars with a hand over their cocktails. But yeah, I mean, no, they're definitely on the it's worth reporting and trying to prosecute even with these odds
mm-hmm.
train. So
no good options. Nope. Welcome to womanhood. Anyway, Barbara then advises Jane that whether or not she presses charges, she'll have to deal with what happened on a psychological level and offers to direct Jane to a therapist. But Jane kind of yells she'll be just fine on her own and looks downcast. And the next day, Jake and Allison show up together to hassle Jane about her legal case. And she shrugs that the meeting went exactly as she predicted it would, so it's over. And Allison and Jake deliver a masterclass in what not to do to support a sexual survivor, or honestly, a survivor of any crime. Clip 7.
Over. Nothing is over. Are you just going to make believe it never happened? I'm not going to let this dirtbag walk.
Jake, it's not about...
No, it's about Jane. But it's tearing me up inside. Look at her. I'm sorry. I know this is making me crazy, but I got to do something.
Maybe you better just leave.
Jake, please. Let me take care of you.
Look, you've done what you could.
Don't stay all bottled up. You're going to explode.
Well, then you better stay far away if you don't want to get hurt.
Yeah, seriously.
And
if this is your idea of helping, go clean the pool.
Yes. But I will give the show credit for, like, even though he's supposed to be a sympathetic character and, like, he doesn't really have any negative effects of acting this way, really. In fact, it seems like he's sliding straight from this relationship into the next one, spoiler, with, like, almost no pause. But they definitely are establishing and making it clear how much his reaction is just his ego, where it's like, yeah. He doesn't come out and so much say that, like, I won't believe that it was rape unless you pursue this to the fullest extent of a law. But there is definitely an underlying, like, something happened. He took something from me, Jake. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do all of the, like, correct things that a survivor is supposed to do, I am not going to support you.
Well, and also some men just have provider protector drive and can't be talked out of it. And, you know, like, I think that the writers think that that's more sympathetic than it actually is. At least it isn't to us. But, like, I think that this is a, you know, relatably frequent way that someone would respond, even if it's sort of, you know, like picking at the scab. So,
right.
That he's like, I'm not supporting her unless I'm trying to avenge her. Like,
why
don't you just go heat up some soup?
Yeah.
It's not that complicated. Just sit there and don't say anything.
Yes. But go rent some comedies and be quiet while you watch them. don't talk for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, then Jane's going to see Richard at his office. He reminds her that he told her not to tell anyone about New York and asks if she also talked to the cops, which she said she did not. Adds he doesn't need to worry about Jake or Allison anymore because she's cleaning house so that she and Richard can stay on task and run their business. And Richard's glad she's come to her senses because what happened between them was special. And Jane manages not to barf as she dodges by saying they both know what they want now and are mature enough to go for it. And he's like, let's get busy. And she beams, okay. But of course, as soon as he's walked out, her smile falls into grim resolve. All of this is very icky, but I get it, I guess. And the next day, I'm not sure if we're supposed to think that Richard spent the night at Jane's, but he is definitely walking out of her place with her hands all over her very padded shoulders, talking excitedly about the future. Did you get the read that she brought him home to, like, make him think that everything was okay between them?
No, I just felt like that was just a weird, like, juxtaposition of scenes and timing.
Right. Or that it just had to happen there. He had to be there for whatever reason.
So exactly.
Anyway, so that they're talking excitedly about the future when Jake runs into them in the courtyard. Clip 8.
This makes me sick. I should have called the cops on you for assaulting me, Hansen. But now you're harassing Jane, and that's where I draw the line.
Am I missing something here or what? Isn't this the guy that raped you?
I told you it was consensual.
I'm talking to her.
Don't judge me.
Don't do this.
Do what, Jake?
Work with this slime so you can sell more dresses so you can be a success.
Success is something you wouldn't know about. Bartender.
Richard, meet me in the car. I need a minute with Jake.
Jane, please.
Did it ever occur to you that I might prefer Richard's company to yours, or are you too dense to get it?
I just can't believe.
Leave it, Jake. I don't want to see you anymore.
She's really good in this scene.
She is.
I mean, this is like I remember how all of this plays out and the like crazy thrill ride that was the denouement in the finale. I will not spoil it. Some of you might remember it. You might not. But her sort of like being torn between wanting to really sell it to Jake so that he'll fuck off.
Yeah.
But also wanting to signal to him, like, I have a plan. I got this.
Yeah.
Bissette is not usually able to work that fine, but I thought she did a good job.
I agree. I think she's been good through this whole plot line.
Yep. Agree.
You know who I have not missed one tiny bit in this episode? Billy. But here
he is. Yeah, I was really just thinking right before this scene. It was like, oh, is he not working this way? Fuck. And forgot a belt. God damn it.
Here he is, beltlessly walking into Shooters. Straight out of my nose.
Boo.
Chatting with Jake. He wants Allison back and is hoping Jake can talk her into it. Can all of you adults please start handling your own shit? This is not middle school, but anyway.
Yeah. Also, stop dating your neighbors. I know the whole show would stop existing, but maybe it's time. Sorry.
Jake is like, love is overrated. And Billy agrees because women are nuts. And Jake clinks beer bottles on it, which, given the circumstances surrounding the woman he thinks is nuts at the moment, is extremely fucked up and not cute.
No.
I hate it.
Also, stop drinking on the job as a signifier of like, I have emotional torment. Uh-huh. Like, no wonder your businesses keep failing. Stop drinking at them.
Yeah. But back to Jane. The darkest part of this is that there's a version of this storyline where Jane is not planning to spoiler Richard, but is actually just going along to get along so she doesn't lose her business for the 700th time. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Billy intuits that Jake and Jane are having problems, and this is how Jake describes what's been going on. Clip 9.
I opened up. I gave a damn. I had some feelings. That's a losing proposition no matter how you look at it.
It is if you give up. Come on, don't let her walk away.
Well, you don't even know what you're talking about, so why don't you just drop it? Let's have a real drink. No thanks.
Ooh. A, that's A. B, I'm sorry, I know I didn't hear don't walk away from a woman from fucking Billy.
Yeah.
I mean, come on now.
Yeah. Also, she said she doesn't want you, so don't listen to her. That's romance. Yeah. Hey, film and TV. Take no for an answer.
Yeah. Anyway, apparently Jake's attitude is grossing out even Billy because he pays and leaves and doesn't even know what actually happened with Jane. So take stock, Jake. This is what you're looking at.
Seriously.
That night, Allison walks a very drunk Jake home to his place and puts him to sleep on his couch. He calls her the employee of the month, and she jokes about giving her a raise, and then it gets weird. Clip 10.
I wonder Billy loves you. You must give him that special feeling. You know what I'm talking about? You pass someone 1,000 times, say hi, and then you move on. And then you see him and something's different. She's it. She's really it.
Is that what Jane is to you?
Jane's nothing to me.
Well, I know how you feel. Billy and I used to be such great friends. I wish it could be like that again, just great friends.
He was never a great friend. He sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jake has a lot to think about. Then we're at a shooting range. Jane loads a handgun while some smarmo tries to chat her up. Clip 11.
You seem kind of new at this.
Yeah, this is my first gun.
Oh, yeah? What'd you get it for? Self-defense?
Safe sex.
That's not a bad line. And no. Also, of course, it's the TV
and
thing.
And it gets rid of him, which desired effect.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's also the TV thing where she's immediately like an amazing shot at, from what we can tell is her very first time at the shooting range.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens next. Finally, our A plot. Sometimes when I come up with what I'm going to call these plot lines, there's really no way to like to title them without giving shit away. So that's why we are just saying Peter's problems go from bad to worse. And you have to trust me. They really do.
Yeah.
Sometime after hanging up on Alicia's violent death in a head-on collision with a semi, Peter leads the cops into a curtain area at the hospital to continue pleading his innocence in Bobby's death, adding that Alicia just confessed to him on the phone, and the detective, whose name is Wiley, is like, oh, totally, before expositing that the call ended 4 hours ago? Were you just playing cards between then and now? Like, I guess that much time has to have passed for the reveal at the end of the scene, but, like, it's weird. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is where we learn Peter doesn't know Alicia died because he repeats her name for Wiley, and a nearby ER resident is like, oh, she's here right next to me in this body bag. Bye. And
yeah. In a closet where people are also being interrogated instead of at the morgue.
Right.
Okay.
So Peter has barely absorbed the sight of Alicia's corpse before Amanda storms in and punches him in the face. Not even a slap, full punch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know we didn't have any, he didn't have anything directly to do with Bobby's death, but he did scumbag Bobby, and teeny Amanda laying Peter out is improbable, but I'll allow it because it's delightful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You can, of course, see it in the visual aids. But anyway, she yells at him about what Bobby said in his message to her and reminds him that she warned Peter never to lie to her and storms off, and Peter is shook. And then after the credits, he's with Wiley in an interrogation room, hearing how bad things sound for him when Wiley recites all the circumstances surrounding Bobby's death. And Peter just repeats that he's innocent. Wiley remembers that Peter's alibi, Kimberly, hasn't seen him since their alleged dinner. And just a sidebar, he was also getting interrogated, like, I think in the last episode. Wasn't it just the last episode that he was still getting interrogated about Brandy? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's having a hard time.
Yeah, really. Does he have like a punch card?
Yeah, seriously. He has a reserved parking space now.
Totally.
Anyway, Wiley lets Peter leave, and Michael's outside, apparently having assumed that Peter definitely did kill Bobby, maybe just in self-defense. And Peter repeats his innocence yet again and explains why he needs to find Kimberly. Michael doesn't know where she is either. Finally, Peter decides to tell Michael his suspicions that Kimberly has, as he puts it, multiple personality disorder. Michael doesn't buy it. Clip 12.
And how, pray tell, did you come up with this diagnosis?
Are you so dense that you haven't noticed a change in her?
Well, sure, but I just confessed a beauty pageant affair. It's making her a little wiggy, that's all.
A little wiggy? Michael, this is the same woman who tried to kill you with a hammer in one of her personalities.
That was her?
Yes, it was her. What about the motorcycle mama? You think that's the same Kimberly who was buying Tupperware? Kimberly, Betsy, hell, she could probably field a team by now.
You're serious about this?
She needs help, Michael. She's lost. God help me, I need her.
That was her? Made me laugh.
I did not feel good about laughing multiple times during this exchange, but Jack Wagner is just feasting on this shit. It's so good.
Yeah.
She could probably field a team by now. Like, that's not how we talk about this. And yet, teehee.
Yeah, occasionally you get a scene like this where it just points up that the writers know how bonkers the show is. Like, just so it's like them telling you, okay, we know you know. We know. But
yeah, and these two can totally sell being like kind of unflapped by it.
Yeah.
Like, let's just give a lot of like crazy exposition to people who are like over at a friend's house watching this for the first time during May sweeps. Like, yeah. Give it to Calabro and Wagner. They can handle it, and they can.
Yes. But the other great thing about that was her with the hammer is because I also forgot that happened, and it was like two episodes ago. That's how much plot is being packed into the season.
And that he's like, that was her, and then he just incorporates it into his worldview because it's Michael Mancini. That he's like, huh. Oh my God, this show.
I know. But the best
so
thing,
good.
It because in the same conversation, he's like, well, I did this other terrible thing. Where it's like, that's true. You did. In fact,
yes.
It's even more terrible than the show is acknowledging, but we're acknowledging it now.
Mm.
Anyway, At the medical practice that night, Sydney is mopily snapping the light on and off. I made a GIF of this, and I just want to add, I was very proud of how the loop happened because it looks very seamless. So make sure to check that out.
It reminded me of that scene of in My So-Called Life where Mr. Katimsky's partner is like, can you please stop doing that? And he goes, no, and then clink.
Anyway, Michael comes bustling out of his office, ordering Sydney to try Kimberly again. But Sydney's sick of calling her because it just reminds her that Bobby is gone. And when Michael points out that Bobby was Sydney's roommate and Kimberly is Michael's wife, Sydney's like, see, was my loss is bigger. And Michael's like, whatever, and leaves because that's where they are with their relationship now. Elsewhere, Amanda shows up at Peter's house. She has decided to confront the situation. So did he set Bobby up? Peter says it's not that simple, which means yes. But he does try to prevaricate before admitting it and confirms that Bobby was clean all along, but adds that she has to believe he did not kill Bobby. And she tells him about the message. He tells her the stuff we know. She tells him how unreliable he sounds. She's not sure what to believe and tries to leave so she can think about it. But he seizes her by the shoulders, escalation from arm grab, demands that she stop running. He needs her. Bobby didn't deserve what Peter did to him, nor for Amanda not to have believed him, she says. And Peter knows, but he just couldn't stand to lose Amanda. And if she doesn't love him, she should leave. But if she does love him, he needs to know it. She looks downcast for a while, but ultimately leans into Peter and lets him start kissing on her while we then see Betsy watching through the window and telling herself she can wait until Peter is done alone. And the next morning, Amanda gets ready to leave Peter's place after a healthy, if improbable, fruit salad breakfast. Who made this fruit salad? That's what I want to know.
Also, he's the one eating the fruit salad and she's just got like, I think they switched the plates because she's got like pancakes, bacon, some eggs. Like, not totally sure that's how that would go. Mm-mm. She doesn't seem like a breakfast guy at all.
No, she seems like a black coffee and get the fuck out person to me.
Atta girl.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So she promises she's there for him. And as soon as the door is closed behind her, Betsy drifts in from the deck and taps Peter on the shoulder. And he calls her Kimberly. She doesn't correct him as he babbles about how glad he is to see her. She thinks Michael's cheating has pushed her over the edge. He needs to get her hospitalized, but not at Wilshire Memorial, somewhere no one knows her. She found a place called Willowbridge. And he hugs her, commending her on her bravery. But also, considering how shitty he was being to Michael about, like, you haven't noticed about Betsy. Like, you haven't noticed about Betsy because you're calling her Kimberly.
Yeah.
But before he drops her off, they need to stop at the cop shop so that she can confirm his alibi. And she agrees. And so then in his car, he is thanking her in advance for backing him up. And he's so busy driving and babbling that he doesn't notice as she takes a syringe out of her purse and jabs it in his leg. And he manages to careen into an alley and stop the car without hitting anyone, asking as he gets out what she gave him. It's just something to calm him down, and then throws him in the back seat. She thinks he belongs in a hospital now. Cut to Amanda's office, where Michael comes in to say he's been driving around looking for Kimberly, and now Peter is also missing. And as evidence for Peter's being missing, Michael says he didn't come into the office, as though that means literally anything at this point with the medical practice. Like,
yeah, wasn't it just last week that they had the sign up that was like such and so in jail?
Yes. Michael in hospital, Peter in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys.
Mm-hmm. But whatever. Amanda assumes Peter's talking to the cops, but no, the cops came to the practice with a warrant for Peter's arrest. And Amanda states that Peter could not possibly have done it. As we've said many times, even though Peter's already tried to kill her, if she means he couldn't have possibly killed Bobby because Bobby is four times as wide as him,
yeah,
maybe.
Well, yeah.
But that's not what she says.
I mean, Alicia managed to do it, so.
Well, she had the help of a golf club.
Yeah, well-placed seven iron.
Oh my God. Anyway, Michael's starting to think Peter really did it. No one at the restaurant recognized his photo. Maybe Peter kidnapped Kimberly to brainwash her into confirming his alibi. Amanda doesn't think Peter is a brainwasher. Sure, just an attempted murderer. But anyway, now she's also worried. And then it's nighttime. Some orderlies are helping Peter out of the car at Willowbridge, ignoring his attempts to identify himself. Betsy smoothly oversees his admission, calling him Mr. Peters and telling the orderlies that one of Peter's delusions is that he's a doctor, so they should definitely medicate him, like, right now. And the next day, Betsy returns to the beach house and is startled to find Michael in his own bed. She tartly states that they're still in a trial separation and he needs to leave. And he whines about how worried he was while she was gone. And when he brings up that dinner with Peter, Betsy denies that it happened. And when he brings up Peter's multiple personality disorder diagnosis, Betsy's insulted. Peter might be a murderer and Michael's taking him at his word. He's probably in Rio by now. Oh, Rio. Cut to the hospital where Peter's looking around the sad day room before getting up and trying to project sanity. We put this in the visual aids. But he like smooths down his hair to be like, yep, all better. Now I am a normal member of society.
Yes. Sanity feathering resumed.
Okay.
The orderly that he addresses, whose name is Dave, is played by Michael Seamus Wiles. Hey, it's that guy who's been in 1 million things, but who you may remember playing ASAC George Merkert on Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
You can see him in the visual aids and be like, oh, yeah. Dave is bearish on Peter's chances of speaking to a doctor, but then Dr. Tucker walks in with Nurse Benson, Priscilla Presley. And
Benson. Love it.
It does not go well for Peter. Clip 13.
My name is Dr. Peter Burns, and I think there's been a mistake made here. A patient of mine, Kimberly Shaw, has convinced you people that I'm a patient.
Has Dr. Shaw come in today?
That's also true. She is a doctor, so I can understand your confusion.
I'm not confused. Do you feel confused?
I can prove to you I'm a doctor. The differential diagnosis of eosinophilia is neoplasm, Addison's disease, collagen vascular syndrome.
Why, that's excellent. You're a voracious reader, I see.
Yes, the point is that
I know just the person for you. Louis, come over here. I want you to meet someone. Louis, this is Mr. Peters, another erudite conversationalist.
Like a patient etherized upon the table, Betty Grable is unable to reduce the double helix proton felix.
That's fine, Louis. Maybe we can get together sometime later.
So good. I mean, given how much of this is ripped straight off of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest,
mm-hmm.
like, I just appreciate that they just are letting things be funny.
Yes.
Because this is so implausible. None of this would happen. And there's like kind of no stakes as a result. So yeah. Just do the comedy. Why not? Mm-hmm.
But yes, also Louis spinoff when. Because mm-hmm. I love this guy.
Yeah. He's great.
But then the thing happens where the medical professional tells the mentally well yet institutionalized person to calm down, and the patient's reasonable agitation about the circumstances makes him so mad it seems to confirm their impression of him. We've all seen this trope. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, mentioning the cops that are looking to interrogate him really does not help Peter's case because it makes him seem like he just is paranoid. And then orderlies restrain him by strapping him to a chair in the day room. Oops. And sometime later, Peter calmly and quietly tells Nurse Priscilla Presley how much better he's feeling. And he's in the middle of buttering her up when Betsy appears to take him to therapy. And as she leads him off, he asks what she wants. This is a long clip, but it, you know, it sets out the whole situation. Clip 14.
I want your appreciation of the symmetry. You imprisoned Kimberly in an asylum. Now I've committed you. You drugged Kimberly.
Okay.
Now
turnabout is fair play. But I got you out, if you recall. So the symmetric thing to do is to release me.
You haven't learned your lesson yet.
I've given him my real address.
Mm-hmm.
My social security number.
That's all right, Peter. I've forged new papers for you, and I've told everyone here that you have a gift for impersonating real doctors whose IDs you steal.
Kimberly.
Kimberly's gone. Rita's in lockdown. I'm Betsy. I'm in charge now. And you don't get out till I say you get out.
Don't you think the director of this institute might have something to say about that?
Well, actually, and this is so karmic, but I'm the acting director for the week.
What do you mean you're the director?
Well, I've been moonlighting here for weeks. Dr. Tucker and I have an excellent working relationship, and now that he's on vacation, he's asked me to cover.
Kimberly. Betsy, please. Let
me try and make you well.
Peter, putting you through everything you put me through is what will make me well. Don't obsess about it. In a way, you'll be free soon.
Okay. I get it.
We're about to find out that this place is near Sacramento. So how has she been interning there for weeks?
Yeah.
Like,
how has she been interning there or moonlighting there or whatever
at all? Yeah.
Doesn't she have to report to a PO? Like, these questions could, I mean, is Chris going to show up in the background of a shot? I know it's been a while. I didn't forget you, buddy.
Yeah.
I just, and here, I mean, here's the other thing. It's not just the implausibility. It's a nighttime soap and these episodes aired in May. I live in the world.
Yeah.
But it's just taking a really long time and they just kind of do variations on the same scene over and over again. Like they did not need like four of these episodes in the, in the back of this season. But I mean, in a way it's good that you played that clip because now we can just sort of be like, you know, hike a thumb at it and be like, as stated, because she states it a bunch of fucking times and it doesn't get any easier to believe. So
no, it's true. And in terms of her parole officer, like, I think the reason they just keep piling incident upon incident is so that you forget stuff that happened.
Yeah, probably.
Because I'm sure it worked. I mean, we already said in this very episode, oh, yeah, the hammer that just happened.
Yeah, it's two episodes ago.
Anyway, then Michael and Amanda are having dinner at the restaurant where Peter and Kimberly dined on that fateful night. On Michael's theory that staffers who might not talk to cops will be happy to talk to them, but his brilliant plan is to be as rude and abrasive as a cop to trick their server into thinking Michael is one, which does not work. But then he notices that the restaurant employs a roving photographer, and Amanda smoothly gets her to hand over her book. And just a couple of pages back, Amanda finds a Polaroid with Kimberly walking through the background, which was dated last week, and then gives it back instead of trying to buy it off her or just asking to keep it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you would. Anyway, Amanda then suggests they go look around Kimberly's office to look at her date book or whatever, because it's the past. And then it's Willowbridge after dark. Dave, the orderly, asks Betsy about Peter's claim that he'll be leaving soon, which she refutes. But Nurse Benson thinks that Peter's been getting better. She even thought they could lower his dosage. He has been taking chlorpromazine, which is an antipsychotic in the Thorazine family. And actually, Betsy wants this dosage increase to 4 a day, which horrifies even Nurse Benson. And the next day, Michael lets himself and Amanda into Kimberly's office. Immediately, she finds Peter's wallet and keys in a paper bag on the desk. Nice opsec, Betsy.
Yeah, come on, Betsy.
Amanda wants to call the cops, but Michael talks her out of it on the theory that Peter could have planted this stuff to incriminate Kimberly and escape prosecution for Bobby's death. And Amanda's like, bro, what? Clip 15.
Look, if the cops bust Kimberly, her life is over. She'll spend years in the slammer and she'll never practice medicine again.
And what a tragedy that would be.
Hey, you may love Peter, but I love this woman. So you want to give us a break?
I'll give you one more day. After that, all bets are off. I just hope that maniac wife of yours hasn't completely lost it again.
LOL at the idea that any doctor can lose their license in this universe for doing literally anything. Once again, Peter was fine after he tried to kill Amanda. Kimberly's fine after trying to blow up a building. Actually, not trying. She did blow up a building.
She did blow up a building.
Yeah.
Lethally, someone died.
She did. Anyway, back to Willowbridge, which, institutional flaws aside, is housed in a very lovely facility. You can see in the visual aids. Dave, the orderly, summons Peter for a walk. Peter continues acting very calm and docile, but then Peter sees Dave is leading him to the procedure room and starts resisting. And the best is Louis, the poem guy, merrily waving at Peter as he goes, which you can also see in the visual aids. And when they get into the procedure room, Betsy assures Peter that he won't feel a thing, and he freaks out with even more terror and also yelling, and Betsy is unmoved and hits the one button that apparently activates the shock theromatic. And that's where we leave it for this poor bastard. Wow. A lot of shit happened in this episode.
And there's still 3 hours of season to go.
Somehow there is. Amazing.
Somehow there is.
Well, let us close up this installment by naming our episode MVP. Boy.
Jane, like, make a plan and execute. Good for you. And Josie Bissett also. She's very good in that.
God, I guess I got to agree. There's really
not
no
a lot
one
of choices.
Else. No, everyone else is kind of really sucking ass. Like, I almost said Billy, but I can't.
You can't, yeah.
Like, you know, Billy gets credit for walking out on Jake when he was being like a real pig, but you know, that's,
yeah.
that's not enough. Okay, least valuable player. I mean, how are we going to narrow this fucker down?
Seriously.
For me, still Richard. He's really making my skin crawl at this point.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with Jake.
I think that's all.
Shut up,
fair.
Jake.
Yeah, really. Shut up and keep shutting up.
Yeah, for real. Next time on Again With This, you can't spell Dominic without Dick. Jane plots her revenge on a different Dick, and the homicide dicks of LAPD seem to have completely misplaced the prime suspect in Bobby's murder. We'll be the prime suspects in the murder of your retinae once you check out our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book. Follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 or join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm pain in the butt joint Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is overly helpful gun range employee Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is not really one for making statements, so I'll let you know that he's David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?